This is the Uplink Marketing Podcast. I'm Avery Cochran, and I'm the podcast producer for Uplink Marketing. And today, Evan's joined by Alan McNairn. With around 10 years of experience in marketing, Alan's passion always lay in clear communication. And in 2017, he founded Orange Identity, a creative agency that helps brands stand out and grow with authentic messaging, where he currently operates as director. In his own words, through effective communication strategies and compelling design, he strives to simplify complex ideas with memorable language. Before we begin, we wanted to remind you that we have a free marketing assessment available on our website. Just go to uplinkmarketing.com/free, click download, and you're good to go. No email signup needed. Our 10-minute assessment will help you determine what your greatest marketing strengths and weaknesses are. When your marketing system is healthy and fully integrated into all parts of your business operations, you'll fuel profitable and sustainable growth while strengthening communication, timing, and efficiency, all while adding value to your company. Effective marketing shows at the bottom line. That's why at Uplink Marketing, we keep our clients' bottom line top of mind. Now, here's Evan and Alan.
I've noticed you listen to a lot of podcasts because you recommend them a lot.
Yes.
I do not. I have only listened. I only listened to podcasts when I had a yard that was small enough for me to cut. And podcasts were my favorite thing to do when I was mowing the grass.
How many years ago was that?
Five.
5 years ago. Yeah. So what podcasts were popular 5 years? Because that totally. Was like the, I mean, we're still, I think, in the golden days of podcasting. Not everybody has one yet, but it's seeming like everybody has one.
Sure.
And soon enough, I think everybody will or will need to. The way that I say it, like if I'm pitching somebody, is podcasts are today where your business was before your business had a Facebook page.
Interesting. So you foresee it will almost be such a standard in the industry.
Yes.
That this is how you get to hear who we are.
Yes. I think the same way that somebody searches for a business on Instagram before they buy something from them, they will be searching on Spotify, specifically Spotify.
Okay, will there have to be a growth in the podcast industry for that to happen? And not to say demand or creation, but a more targeted segment. Because to me, one thing that is consistent is if I say, hey, I'm making a business Facebook page.
Yep.
Those businesses are basically all posting a couple quotes, jumping on. They know how to post on Instagram, but podcast has a little bit of barrier to entry because maybe you're a little bit exposed. I don't know what you see, but I feel it feels like a little bit of a harder barrier to entry.
Yeah, but I think that exposure is what the market will demand over time.
That's cool.
If you are not willing to have that level of exposure or be confident on audio, and it doesn't even have to be somebody at the company. It could be an agency that you hire out for your podcast that handles that exposure.
Uh-huh.
But I do think that every business will need to have a podcast and that people will search Spotify for your business before they buy from you in the future.
All right. So here were the podcasts that I listened to. Entree Leadership Podcast, Radiolab, Sleeping at Last Podcast, This Cultural Moment, which I think is from Brownsbridge Church or Bridgetown Church. And then I have a auburnsports.com and a 99% Invisible. Do any of those sound familiar?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly okay. Sleeping at Last, Entree Leadership. I've never listened to Entree Leadership, but I'm familiar, I think, just being in the area of the country we're in.
Yeah, sure.
And the industry we're in. And Sleeping at Last is still going. I forget his name. Do you remember his name?
I don't.
He created the songs about all the Enneagram numbers.
Yep.
Was he doing it 5 years ago? Is that kind of when he began that? Okay.
Yeah.
And then it was cool because everybody involved in the making of that song for that particular number identified with that particular number.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was really my first deep dive. It probably wasn't 5 years ago, but I probably was in my peak of podcast listening 5 years ago.
Okay.
But he would really break down Enneagram and how it's misunderstood, how it's perceived, how this person handles stress, how they relate to each other.
Yes.
And I was interviewing someone as an Enneagram expert.
Yep.
Dang.
This is why I don't think you can get that type of information any other way. Low production.
Uh-huh.
You just need a phone. you don't need, you know, I guess video is one step better, more exposure.
Okay.
But
it's more stimulating maybe for your brain and easier to kind of walk around with.
It's an active, it's an active engagement instead of a passive engagement. Facebook is almost a passive engagement now. Instagram's a passive engagement. You're doing something else while you're scrolling.
Oh, that's interesting.
And podcasting can be the same, but watching a video is active.
All right, I'm gonna switch us to our elevator pitch.
Let's
topic.
Do it. Let's do it.
I was like, give me your elevator.
You're
pitch.
You're a good host.
For why should I listen to your podcast? What is the Uplink Marketing Podcast?
That's a great question, and I'm exploring the answer to that live on the podcast. It used to be, so it began with Hudson and I sitting down every Friday and no prep, having a conversation. We try to have some sort of metaphor involved for life and something we've learned in the last week.
Cool.
And this was just to get the ball rolling. And this is what I would encourage any company to do, is do something. Having something out there is better than nothing. So that was my mindset.
Cool.
The last, I think, 5 to 6 episodes have been very specific agency related, and I've loved it. I've learned a lot from it. So currently the goal of the podcast is for me to learn from people who are doing things, and it's an avenue for me to connect with other people in agencies to learn things. So I would be completely content continuing to do this podcast if I had zero listeners.
It is just more a, hey, can I have your exclusive attention for an hour of time to have a good conversation?
Yes. Now, in those conversations, there's a lot of value brought to the table from other people, and they are able to share their knowledge with an audience, whatever that audience is. So I think there's value all around. My baseline is I want to talk to people. I enjoy doing that. Podcasts are my favorite. Podcasting is the favorite part of my job.
Really?
Favorite thing I do. Sitting down with you right now, having this conversation, nothing beats it this week besides the other podcasts that I recorded.
Hearing that, what is your Enneagram?
7.
Okay. That somewhat is in line. As a 3, and while I'm excited to be here, I look at an hour of time for a conversation and wonder what emails and tasks and production is delayed, you know?
For you specifically being here this morning?
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, even as a 3, and I think that's even just the difference. But I always love the conversation
and
the time, but I think I have to intentionally choose and recognize the value in it. Like what you're saying to me felt lost, where podcasting felt at times shouting into an empty cave, like an echo chamber.
Yep.
You know, like, hear all my great thoughts. It's why I don't tweet on Twitter. Like,
sure.
And that's a personal, you know, like, I love receiving information, but I don't feel like my voice or contribution was maybe as valuable as it could be there. That I hear, you know, even clients who come up to me, it was like, hey, we're thinking about starting a podcast. And I'm often driven by metrics and results and what's our ROI here. But I've heard so many activated relationships and unique, you know, next step connections because of the podcast dropped.
Yep.
So it's an interesting dilemma I'm faced in, but I'm really intrigued by your opposite side.
Yes. Well, and there's, if I'm pitching it to a client, I don't think, unless they were also a 7 and just wanted to do something they enjoyed and connect with people, because I do think there's value there.
Sure.
But it's a very specific type of person that would be that. So that you were asking me specifically for a podcast.
Sure. That
would be my elevator pitch for it, for Uplink, or like, what does this podcast exist to do? It's to have conversations about agency life or working at an agency. And the value for a listener would be learning from people who are doing the same thing.
Cool.
So the listener at this point probably works at a marketing agency, or they may not get much value out of it.
Sure.
If I were going to a client, it would look very different just based on what their business model is. Let's jump to elevator pitches.
Love it.
So you asked me, you tried to get us on track, and I continued to keep us off track, which is a very 3-7 relationship, probably. That's funny. That's a funny dynamic that I'm sure will continue to evolve throughout our relationship. So we've been working together, not together. We worked together on a project, though.
Yeah, for sure.
I met you 2 months ago. I don't understand time at the moment. And I don't think I heard your elevator pitch until this week.
Oh, yeah, and you weren't even being told it. You eavesdropped on it.
I was a part of the conversation.
Oh, okay.
But
well, that elevator pitch, you walked away and complimented it. And then you also said, how'd you land there? And it's evolved a lot.
So where did it begin? How did it begin? Can we talk about that evolution?
Yeah, so I'll say a little bit just who I am, what I do.
Yes.
And then share what the original elevator pitch was. So our agency is called Orange Identity. And I was about to drop right into it, but I feel like you want to hear the first one. I used to tell people we help brands stand out and grow. And the heart behind the name Orange Identity was helping brands be orange among apples, recognized for their unique differences so that their target audience chooses them and they aren't just discovered by a friend's referral. Now, mm-hmm. not that referrals aren't good, but I wanted their value to be so distinct that in a lineup of their top competitors, they were an orange among apples and their customers came to them and wanted their exact product. So here's the problem, helping brands stand out and grow. You don't know my industry, you don't know anything. And I would watch people's reaction, give me some positive head nods, and then basically respond with a question. Not a cool clarifying question, but basically say, so do you guys do websites? Over and over and over and over again. You know, I'd say it at weddings, I'd say it in line at, you know, getting food.
How many times do you think you said the initial pitch like that?
I recognized it pretty quick that I had a problem. I mean, I probably said it, you know, for 2 or 3 weeks, mainly because I had printed it. I didn't want to move on from it. You know, like I had, it was on things. So it's like helping brands stand out and grow. And I also had a tagline of difference fuels decisions.
Yes. And it made, in your head, whenever you would say it, you knew exactly what you were trying to say.
Totally.
And you knew exactly what you were trying to get across to somebody else. Somewhere in the air between your mouth and their ears.
Totally.
Something was lost.
Well, so here, to me, the goal of the elevator pitch is how can I succinctly tell you what I do in a way that excites you and makes you think either one, I need that now, or I know someone who needs that now. The reaction after an elevator pitch should be, let me get your information or how can I get in touch? And if it's not, there's a gap. There's still growth to do to refining your elevator pitch. And a good way that I like to test it is hearing my wife tell people what I do at a party. Like, if she's able to tell people.
Could we call her right now and have her say,
oh, no,
what
she would hate that. She probably hasn't even heard how I have begun to shift it.
Okay.
So I now tell people what I do is I help businesses cover the gap from what their message currently is to exciting who they hope to. So that when they speak, it creates an excitement and they want to work with them.
Yeah, which is an elevator pitch in and out. Like it's an inception of an elevator pitch almost. You're not saying I help businesses with elevator pitches, but everything you just described seems like the definition for an elevator pitch.
Sure.
Being able to say something that excites the other person to do one of two things, get your information or say, well, how can I work with you?
Yeah,
absolutely. Did I get all those things?
How do you simplify your value?
Yep.
So that it's about them. And how is it so clearly about a need that they see as a felt need that they say how?
So what were the reactions? Is this like iteration two? You got to where you're at now?
No, it's definitely been step by step by step by step. And I say I am happy with the one that I have now only based off the reaction. If, you know, if I see people begin to be confused again, we'll just evolve.
Yep. But my reaction the other day, unprompted, I think we had a 15-minute conversation with another person. And in that conversation, you gave an elevator pitch. And the only thing I asked you about after that 15-minute conversation was your elevator pitch, how you described what you do.
Yeah. And I think a good component that I learned is my first example is helping brands stand out and grow. There's a yes or no, right? We have a definitive, do I need to stand out? What will it cost me to grow? The second elevator pitch that I shared is a lot more on a scale. There's versatility to it. I want to help you from go where you are to when you speak, it more excites your audience. Suddenly, I'm not asking you this deep, you know, can you afford a website right now? Mm-hmm. Do you need or do a rebrand? All those are very buyer intimidating thoughts.
Yep.
But if I'm saying, hey, to some degree, what would it mean for your audience to be more excited about hearing from you? you'd be interested in asking a couple of follow-up questions. And follow-up questions is how I gauge, do they put me in the right industry, the right category, with the right outcomes?
This reminds me of a feedback question that's almost a trick question, but it's not a manipulative trick. It's meant to get honest feedback from people that are around you. Because oftentimes, if I were to say, hey, Alan, you know, give me honest feedback on something about me, you're a kind person, and even a very direct person may not give you the most honest feedback. And sometimes you really want the most honest feedback, right? So the trick is to ask a question ahead of that, which is, hey, on a scale from 1 to 10, where am I on this specific thing? Like, how am I on communicating my brand or whatever? So people don't feel like they're being mean if they don't put you at 10. Nobody's ever at 10. So they'll say like, oh, 6 or 7. So then you say, oh, well, what can I do to get from a 6 or 7 to an 8 or 9? And so the trick then, it takes the meanness or the directness Absolutely. That could be perceived as mean out of it. But it sounds like what you're doing there is saying in this pitch of, hey, your brand may be at a 6 or 7 or maybe even an 8 or 9. We want to help you go from where you're at with a 6 or 7 to an 8 or 9 or to a 10. Like, what would it even take to get to a 10?
Yeah, up that notch of clarity.
Is a 10 possible? Yeah, yeah. It makes me think of this way of getting feedback or painting a picture for somebody that's not saying you're doing a bad job or you need to do better. It's just like, hey, the reality is here's where you are and here's the opportunity that's out there.
Yeah, I think a gap is people don't buy an excitable message. You know, like no one is, you know, Googling or running into their boardroom saying like, we
need an excitable message.
Yeah. So, you know, no one's Googling that service. People are Googling, like, the felt problem is, I need a new website, you know, or our logo's terrible. This pitch deck's not working. Our marketing material is boring.
What service do you typically, if you say that to somebody, what service most often follows up?
Web?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I love to pair web with physical product. I love to tangibly hold things, and I think ignoring the value of a really tangible, concrete messaging is powerful.
Web changes often. I know we're getting off topic from an elevator pitch now. I'm just curious. Web changes often. What will never change as far as a website? Like, what's the most timeless aspect of a website in your opinion or in your experience?
Well, even as, you know, if we say elevator pitch, it's how clearly and how human you show you can help someone's problem, right? And I don't think that's just in words. It needs that visual. To me, people perceive information so much more quickly in photo and video. So the wrestle that we have is, how quickly can I show you and prove to you that I can make your life better? You know?
Yep.
So on that initial gut reaction homepage, do you feel that intrinsic, I need this?
Yep.
And you can, you know, play into a lot of different mental little buttons and nodes to kind of think, what avenue are we trying to hope that they need this? But no matter what website evolves into and what trends try to make you attract your target audience, at the end of the day, do they see it and think, my life would be better with them in my life?
Yep. Elevator pitches are just continuing to come back, which is why we're talking about them today, because you're saying the elevator pitch on the site communicated in such a way is the most timeless.
It's really funny.
Let's rewind a bit and just define what is an elevator pitch, because it sounds like everything you said for messaging, communicating that visually and with words, is an elevator pitch in and of itself. You're even maybe the way somebody looks could be a part of their elevator pitch.
Yeah,
it doesn't even have to be the words they're saying, but the confidence with which they say the words is just as much a part of the pitch as the words themselves.
Totally.
What are all the aspects that come into play there?
It's funny because even when you said, you, in a way, help brands with their elevator pitch, right? You kind of clarified this mark that what if it really all, it comes down to, how do I simplify my message and make it seem attractive? Even when I began to talk about print for just a second, I think every communication piece, the tension you feel is how do I create this experience that is almost as though I'm walking down a downtown street. This store that looks really cool is closed, and I just missed it. You know, like it's 5:30. They closed at 5. I can see them still putting away some inventory, counting their cash register. And I put my face up to the window and want to know what day they open. Like, I think in all messaging, what I'm trying to create is that first loop of that curiosity gap. So that they, from the headline, move into the copy, from the copy, move to the action, from the action, become fans and subscribers. You know, like, what is this journey that we create?
Yep.
So I think when I use the term elevator pitch, I think what I'm most honing in on is how do we simplify value and make it something that's attractive to someone else? Because it's intrinsically natural for someone to say, hey, tell me a little bit about what you do.
Yep.
The way they phrase the question is, what do you do? And it's about you.
Yep.
But the elevator pitch that wins is the answer that's how what I do is a benefit to you, right? So it's immediately flipping it on its head.
You painted a really beautiful picture there, walking down a downtown street and like the store just closed. There's a tension that I think you even mentioned. I think you said the word tension. Whenever the store's just closed, but I want it to be open, or I'm looking inside thinking to myself, when does this place open back up? I've got to get in there. Is there a system to create tension, or is it very specific to who the store is, what the brand is, what the company does? Or as you create those tensions, are you like, here are the questions I ask?
Clarify that for just a second. So tension in terms of kind of creating conversion on someone, for someone?
Tension as far as getting somebody to feel the feel. Like I feel a feeling in my body whenever I look through the window. Whenever I imagine myself looking through the window.
Right.
And the tension is that place is closed, but I want it. I want to go in there. That right. Tension. So that tension is a maybe a call to action, or but it's not even a call to action because they're not saying come in here. It's here's what it is: sparking curiosity, or tapping into an innate desire that exists within all of us.
Absolutely. I mean, I think so. Communication theory was the first thing I studied in school.
Okay.
That I nerded out on.
Love right? it. Yes.
Like I literally studied hard in so many courses.
Can we go down this rabbit hole?
Yeah.
What is communication theory?
Communication theory is more the study of how words and language, and we can just use that umbrella of marketing, but that's too broad. The different principles in it, that how the human brain elicits responses and how we think. You know, so like even when you think about persuasive discourse, what are the different arenas that are used to persuade someone? Right? Fear is the most powerful.
Scarcity.
Yeah. So what you alluded to is scarcity, right? Yep. So like if I don't have it, it's going to run out. There are all these principles that we've learned almost to imitate and value because we see them working for other people, but they all have, you know, very definitive meanings. There are lots of silly and dumb ones that are fun to kind of just play around with, but it's these ideas of just how the human brain works that this color elicits this response, this type of headline more is sympathetic. If I were to give you a little bit of something, you would feel this reciprocity owed to me stay engaged.
I listened to a podcast yesterday where the guy was talking about political strategies in particular, which this is the messiness of marketing, is that people use everything you're talking about in really bad ways.
Sure.
But I don't think that makes marketing in and of itself bad. Podcast I was listening to yesterday, they had these stickers they would ask people to put in their dashboard. Like, hey, would you mind putting this sticker just in your dashboard? Like, you don't have to stick it on your car or anything. Very simple ask, something that most people are likely to say yes to, even if they don't support that politician, to avoid some sort of conflict.
Yeah.
There was nothing involved in that ask. Hey, while you're, you know, since you're doing this, would you mind putting this sign in your yard? It's like, oh, well, I've already signed up. I might as well finish. You know, it's ingrained into us to not quit anything, right? Like mm-hmm. our culture is if you start something, you got to finish it. Don't quit. So you just continue down this path and it goes a little more and a little more. And it's like, all right, they have you hosting a party for this political candidate or whatever it is. So anyways, that's what it kind of made me think of. And just the ideas of like how people use fear and scarcity and sex in marketing in ways that don't benefit the general public.
Sure.
And then people use fear and scarcity and sex in marketing in ways that do benefit the general public as well.
So, yeah. I might be off, but I believe what you just described might be cognitive dissonance.
Okay.
So I don't want to, I've said yes to something
yes.
small. I must want that something small. I would rather assume I continue to want that something small than wrestle with the tension and that hate of making a bad decision. So I will stick to this decision and let it grow.
All right.
You know?
Yes. Okay. So communication theory led you down this path of learning about the tension. I think tension brought us down the communication theory path. The feeling inside, these emotions we're feeling inside.
Really,
cognitive dissonance, getting somebody to the point where they make a small commitment, knowing that they're more likely to make a bigger commitment after that. How do you use that for good?
You invite them to receive something free, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's why content marketing has value.
Mm-hmm.
It's why if you, you know, download this 5 steps to blank and all this original, you know, value, then hey, and then now stay on my email subscription list. And hey, here's another free thing.
Yep.
It's that exact same situation where you gave them something, they found it valuable, and they're now receiving constant updates and value from you.
Yep. So it does seem as though at some point the tide shifted from you need to pay for any value that I give you to this world that we live in now where people are giving away a lot of value for free and not asking anything in return, knowing that one day they may need to ask you something in
right.
return. I think this is the basis also just tying back to what we were talking about at the beginning, podcasts. The information you're sharing with me and anybody who listens to this podcast today, you've worked hard, you've paid for your education, for communication theory. Like you've put a lot of time and money and effort to learn all the things that you're just freely sharing today. And the hope is that somebody listens to it. It's like, oh, Alan, that dude, I love the way he's thinking about this. And whenever he mentioned an elevator pitch, there is a potential upside to it, but there's no initial, like, you're getting this today for being on the podcast.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think when you think about what you do, so my brain sometimes likes to create this like picture. So if I'm sick, like I literally imagine my body as like that scene in Endgame where like the portals are opening up and like everyone's waging war against each other. And like if I take a vitamin, then Thor shows up and I'm like, I'm good, guys. Like, no, it's good. I like to think about my brand interacting with other people and my business and my person.
Yeah.
As almost at like a middle school or high school party and thinking about where, and I put it in that stage because I think in those moments, who you were was possibly more defined by what you did and kind of the groups you ran in, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like if you imagine the lunchroom tables. Well, what does it look like to socialize in those moments? What does it look like to, you know, if I were campaigning for class president and I was promising, you know, free Kool-Aid to come out of the water fountains, you know, to some degree, I might get exposed with all this just wild ideas. But if I'm able to walk up to someone and really care, offer them value, and connect, it makes sense rather than saying, hey, would you buy this? You know, so I think where access to information has grown, when we personify our brand and think, how would I listen to this? You know, how does this headline read in a room?
Hmm.
How does this copy come across if it were truly in a conversation?
Yep.
How would someone receive this email rather than someone busting through the door and be like, buy this now? But to say, Listen, you've shown up to things before. I know you like this. Would you guys be interested in this? And if you are, hey, on me, I got your first drink. You know, but it's like, that guy would leave the room and everyone kind of look around and be like, hey, let's invite him back. He's fun to be around.
Yeah, yeah. So, I love the idea of personifying your brand. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're great.
This, I think, is why brands want to be associated and pay so much money to be associated with personal figures, an athlete or an actor, some sort of celebrity with a personification of themselves that's oftentimes created by the public.
Attached to it.
Yeah, yeah. And then and it literally personifies a brand. It's like, okay, Nike is Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods is Nike. There's like no separation between
right.
the two, or you know, whatever it is. So if you were to pick somebody that's Orange Identity, who would you pick?
Who would I personify?
Yeah, who's the person? How would you personify Orange Identity? And a part of this, I think, as a smaller agency, like I see Orange Identity as you, and you can't separate
Absolutely.
Yourself from
That's the tension.
This. So like you are the personification of your brand right now. And I feel that with myself. I'm the personification of Uplink
you're
marketing.
Gonna, you're
right
gonna put
Somebody
out
doesn't
what you
like me, they're not gonna work with Uplink. Somebody doesn't like you, they're not gonna work with Orange Identity. I think as companies grow, they don't have that problem as much with individuals that are actually working in the company. So it's kind of a hard question to answer because it is you.
Because that was gonna save me.
Yeah. Okay. So who other than you then?
So if now it's a question of who is the celebrity I most idolize and want to become.
Yes, or that you're like, yeah, I'm like that person. Like, I'm just going to learn. Yeah, maybe it's too tough of a question because of the size and the association directly with you at this point in your company
sure.
stage.
So my thinking is trying to identify who is someone who approaches their craft with art and who is someone that is willing to do things a little differently, who is someone that's willing to have fun, and who values relationship over results. Maybe like relationship and results are really just like tightly mirrored and holding hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my qualifiers to finding that person.
Hmm.
And so maybe it's just being in the Marvel universe and just already referencing Endgame. But my first thought is like a Tom Holland type.
Okay.
The fun Spider-Man.
Okay.
Goofy.
When he's Spider-Man or when he's
I really know very little about him.
Okay.
Other than just watching a couple of his trailers and some interviews.
Okay.
And in his interviews, even with cast members,
yeah.
The writers often don't even give him the full script because he can't keep it in and he gets excited or ruins a spoiler or things like that.
Yes.
So I think that just kind of jovial.
He breaks some rules.
Yeah.
There's some rule breaking, which you mentioned in there. Think differently and rule breaking are kind of the same thing because you're not allowed to think differently if you follow the rules.
Yeah. And so he brings this
trouble.
Young energy.
Yep.
He loves, but kills it. Does a great job. Shows up.
Yep.
And brings a lot of energy. So that's a go-to answer just to have it. But I'm going to answer your question earlier because I think it was two parts.
Okay,
one.
Yes.
I answered it by saying, how do you basically find the value in doing something like this and where do you see it? And then it led to the question of saying, if there's so much value given away, what tension do you have and what is the reaction to being on a podcast, right? And if everyone's just giving away everything for free,
yep.
what does it lead to? I think I've recently looked back over my own work and realized what it means to become and not that I am one, an expert in a field, right? So I can tell you that is the theory name. You can go Google it. You can go down this huge rabbit trail of marketing and communication theories, which are only going to make you a better marketer.
Yep.
But through wild practice and putting them in action is the difference, right? So I could tell you everything in my head, but it's the difference and gap of hours. You know, that 10,000 hours to become really a master of something to say, well, don't design that page like this because of X, Y, and Z. Because when it gets scaled down, when this gets changed, when someone goes to click it, when someone's thumb scrolling, all these learned behaviors over time on how to support that are what separate me just giving away value to someone coming to hire me versus someone who has learned that communication theory.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yes.
And I didn't believe that for a long time. I've recently started to look at my own work and look back on just a year or two ago and say, I got a lot better.
I think in our 20s, it's good that we don't believe it because it allows us to try things that are way harder than I think you and I would try right now, knowing this and believing in this idea you just expressed. It's like, well, I'm going to apply my knowledge and understand that there's so much that I don't know, yeah. Which is a great place to arrive at. I don't know if you arrive at that place without the arrogance of being in your 20s and the arrogance of I can do all this and trying things and failing miserably. Like that is the experience I think that you're talking about that people lack and that are just going to, you know, blind squirrels are going to find a nut every once in a while and that happens. But
I don't want to lose it either. Right?
Yes. No. And that's the, so I think you go from the arrogance, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth.
Go for it. I
relate to the arrogance of my 20s and thinking that I knew everything that needed to be done. And that's brought me here on this journey. So I look at it with a fondness and a little bit of an embarrassment, but also I appreciate it because it made me try things or allowed me to try things that I would have not tried.
Absolutely.
So you go from this place of arrogance to this place of almost humility, just like, I don't know anything and I'm motivated to learn now, to where I think before it was I'm motivated to do and then I'm motivated to learn. But whenever you combine the two and you're doing and learning at the same time, come with a humility, that's where it starts to, you start working with people who have those three things. They've done, they've learned, they see themselves as a learner and a doer, mm-hmm. and this humility that comes with it is a pretty powerful combo.
And there's a good chance, because we're both similar ages and how long we've been in this field, it's wildly grown in complexity and depth. So where we've become a master of a few things, you now send out an email with unlimited potential, where you used to just say, wow, look at these clicks.
Yep.
Look how we were able to transform this campaign. And now it's, you know, has everything been tagged appropriately? Are these links, you know, relating into the analytics correctly? How do we track this? What's the conversion? How's the A/B test? And it's just the scale of what you need to learn is so vast today that I think it's a lot more encouraging to say, yeah, at least I know a couple of these things really, really well.
Yep.
And I'm encouraged to know I have a lot of learning to do.
Absolutely. Okay, why is marketing important?
Marketing is important because a product that is crappy and has great marketing will beat a product that is great and has crappy marketing.
I agree. I went and toured the Miami Dolphins facility 4 years ago.
Right.
And met with their marketing team. And they had a like two or three completely losing seasons, but they were selling
number out. One in ticket sales.
Yes, number one in ticket sales. And they attribute it all to their marketing department, not to the product that they were selling, because the team was losing every
Absolutely.
Week.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember reading case studies on the specific sales strategy they would do, and they sold out their season tickets before right. anyone else.
So they're giving away a dinner with Dan Marino to collect leads, and they had a sales team ready to go to reach out to those people who signed up for the dinner with Dan Marino and give them an offer that you could only get from signing up for that giveaway.
Cool.
And they just worked those leads like crazy and then gave away a dinner with Dan Marino, like followed through on what the contest was. Anyways, that's part A to why marketing is important. And I just wanted to throw out an example because I think that that's true.
Yeah. And I would say it comes back to what the whole conversation began around today, the elevator pitch. It's the gap of what do you say simply that excites someone else. I think that's just the truth in most conversations, right? Like in an authentic, meaningful way, how do I connect with you? And how do I create value that my relationship with you is not just based on what you can give me, but yep. what I can also give you. Yep. And that's not just true to any specific, you know, section or, you know, relationally, spiritually, emotionally, hanging out with the one bowl of chips and salsa. I can't just dominate that salsa. We got to share it. And I think businesses will function at their best when their heart is authentic and focused on what they can give away. Hmm. I think marketing is communicating that.
Love it.
To make someone care. Like, why? if I just tell you, we make the best websites in the world. No, we don't.
Unless you actually make the best websites in the world.
Sure.
You can't say that because there are brands that do that and they back it up. You have to be able to back it up. But that also is still the statement that excites whoever. Because there is somebody out there that wants to work with the company that makes the best websites in the world. It's not Uplink Marketing.
And so, it's not us either. And I think what we would add to that, if we were hired by the company that says that, I would say, what does that mean for your client? I think a good practice that I like to do when someone tells me what they do, ask them the question why 3 times. Or like, why does that matter? Is a better way to phrase it. So what do you do? We make the best websites in the world. Well, why does that matter? Well, because a good website helps a business, you know, position themselves as the expert. Well, why does that matter? Well, when their client sees themselves as the expert, then they'll reach out and work with them. Well, why does that matter? Well, when they're working with the right people who can make the excellent website, they too will experience that success. That's the language that I think they needed to lead with. After they've asked, why does that matter 3 times? It's typically where you find home.
I think you need to start a podcast. Why does that matter 3 times?
I'd be in.
Dude, thank you for your time today and for talking about elevator pitches and providing value to me and anybody that ends up listening to this thing.
Well, I look forward to you being on a host or a guest on Why Does That Matter?
Yeah, done.
Cool, man. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks again, listeners, for tuning into the Uplink Marketing Podcast. And many thanks again to Alan for talking with us today. He's got some amazing things going on at Orange Identity, so be sure to check out their website, orangeidentity.com. That's orange-identity.com. See their work and learn how to stand out as an orange among apples. Also, don't forget about our free marketing assessment on our website, uplinkmarketing.com/free. You don't even have to give us your email address. Just click download and find your potential areas for growth today.